Shalom. Welcome to the Jewish Task Force, JTF. My name is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to refuah shlema, complete recovery for Sharon Katz, and to elevating the souls of Simcha Bat Rachel Pesach Zeh Ben Chava, Harab Mir Kahana, Yosef Ben Meir, Bari Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Robert Mitman, and Sipora Fegi Bat Liba. We have two subjects that we want to discuss on this week's program. Both of them, I think, are relevant. One is the defeat of Roy Moore, the Republican U.S. Senate candidate in Alabama. JTF supported Roy Moore, and we're going to explain, how does JTF decide which candidate to support? What is the criteria for JTF when we look as to whether or not we're supporting a candidate or opposing a candidate? And Roy Moore will be a good example of what JTF does when it looks for a candidate, and how Donald Trump and the Republicans stabbed Roy Moore in the back and continue to stab him in the back. They betrayed Roy Moore. We'll explain. The second subject we want to discuss is this week's Parashat Vayigash. And in this week's parasha, we want to discuss the concept of the two Meshichim, the two Jewish messiahs, Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David. And it's very relevant to this week's parasha, or the parasha Vayigash that we're going to be reading actually in the synagogue next Shabbat. And we'll explain why. First, let's start off, though, with Roy Moore. Roy Moore was a very controversial figure in the state of Alabama. Why was he controversial? Because he defended the Ten Commandments. He refused to remove the Ten Commandments. Courts ordered that it be removed, and he refused to do so, and so he was thrown off the bench. In addition to that, he later on was elected again by the voters in Alabama, and this time he was ordered to allow homosexual marriages. He refused to do that, and he ordered the clerks in the state of Alabama not to do that. And so he was defying, quote-unquote, the God of the left in this country and of the phony right, the U.S. Supreme Court, and the ridiculous decision of the U.S. Supreme Court. They do not have the authority, by the way, to order the whole country to bow down to the sodomite agenda. They do not have that authority. But in any event, he, Judge Roy Moore, refused to bow down and refused to accept their orders. And so he was again removed from the bench. So twice he was removed from the bench after being elected by the voters of Alabama. In other words, this is not a democracy. The voters cannot choose. The voters of Alabama have no say in what goes on in their own state. A distant court in Washington, the U.S. Supreme Court, 9 justices on a distant court in Washington dictate to the people of Alabama, to the people of the United States, what the law is going to be. And Roy Moore refused to accept that. So he was a man of principle. Twice he was he was thrown out of office. He refused to compromise. He was a man of principle and very courageous. For JTF, of course, the key issue is Israel. When we decide whom we're going to support, it's based upon Israel. Is the candidate good for Israel? Is the candidate good for the Jewish people? That's the issue that JTF makes its decisions on. And we don't hide that. I'm not saying we don't care about what happens in the United States or elsewhere. We do. But the primary issue, the decisive issue for us, the overriding issue for us, is Israel and the Jewish people. That's what we base our support on. And it's clear in the Bible that that's also what God bases his support on when he says, I will bless them that bless thee and curse them that curse thee. He promises to bless everyone that blesses Israel and blesses the Jews, and curse everyone who curses Israel and curses the Jews. And historically, we've seen that that's exactly what happens. But in any event, that's our criteria. If a candidate is good for Israel and the Jewish people, we support them. If he's bad for Israel and the Jewish people, we oppose the candidate. And that's why we oppose Donald Trump. Donald Trump is a disaster for Israel. Donald Trump is continuing to pressure Israel not to build Jewish settlements. He's continuing to pressure Israel not to act militarily against Iran. Not that Bibi Netanyahu has the guts to do that anyway. But his positions on the issues are not good for Israel and not good for the Jewish people, and not a departure from the anti-Israel policies of Barack Hussein Obama. and his Jerusalem announcement was a complete bluff, and did nothing to further the cause of Israel, or to help in terms of ensuring that Jerusalem will remain the capital of Israel. It did nothing in that respect. But in any event, I don't want to rehash our many reasons that we've given for a long time as to why we're not supporting Trump. But he is bad on Israel, and we will not support him because he's bad on Israel. On the other hand, Ted Cruz, an evangelical Christian who believes in what the Bible says, that God will punish you if you don't support Israel, and God will reward you if you do, Ted Cruz was good on Israel. And he was an evangelical who really meant it, who really believed. And the same thing with Roy Moore. Roy Moore was pro-Israel, and although he wasn't extremely knowledgeable about the Middle East, nevertheless, his instincts were good. He went to pro-Israel prayer events where Christians were praying for Israel, and he made statements in the campaign opposing aid to the PLO terrorists and to others and supporting Israel. So Roy Moore, we felt instinctively, was a man of principle and someone who believed in the Bible and would stay true to his beliefs and his principles. That was his history. Anyway, they tore Roy Moore down. And by the way, the election was very close. Very, very close. I think it was about by 1%, supposedly. Roy Moore lost by supposedly 1%. And there was a lot of voter fraud. So I don't even believe that's legitimate. But in any event, it was very, very close. He barely lost the election. When he started out his campaign, he was the immediate frontrunner for the Republican nomination for the U.S. Senate. And Donald Trump immediately endorsed his opponent, his establishment opponent, Senator Luther Strange. Senator Luther Strange is the ultimate corrupt establishment fraud. He was appointed by a corrupt governor in Alabama who was taken down by a scandal, who was removed from office by a scandal because he, as attorney general, didn't investigate the governor. I mean, it was so dirty and so corrupt and so filthy. Luther Strange was scum, like the Republican establishment. The Republican establishment is scum. The Democrat establishment is scum. And Luther Strange was appointed to the Senate by this corrupt governor, and it was just, the whole thing was so dirty. And Donald Trump and Mitch McConnell got together to support Luther Strange. Donald Trump went to Alabama to campaign for Luther Strange, something which he never did for Roy Moore. Never went to Alabama to campaign for Roy Moore. He went to Florida and said in Florida, Florida's borders Alabama, he said you should vote for Roy Moore. Big deal. But he never actually went to Alabama to campaign for Roy Moore. He did go to Alabama, though, before the Republican primary to campaign for Luther Strange against Roy Moore. And he supported Luther Strange and helped with the effort in which Luther Strange raised and spent tens of millions of dollars. Tens of millions of dollars in a state like Alabama. That means the airways, television airways, the radio, the internet, newspapers, billboards. The state was saturated with ads smearing Roy Moore, smearing him, tearing him down, lying about him. I mean, just the most vicious campaign against him. And Donald Trump supported all of that. Donald Trump tweeted again and again in support of Luther Strange and against Roy Moore, and backed Mitch McConnell's efforts to smear and tear down Roy Moore. And so when Roy Moore entered the general election campaign, he won the primary anyway. Roy Moore did win the Republican primary. But when he entered the general election campaign, he was already deeply wounded by the vicious smear campaign of Luther Strange, a campaign that was fully supported by Donald Trump and Mitch McConnell and the Republican establishment. Again, Donald Trump went specially to Huntsville, Alabama, to hold a huge rally in support of Luther Strange, strongly supporting Luther Strange. He went special to Huntsville. Donald Trump went specially to Huntsville, Alabama, to campaign against Roy Moore. And of course, eventually, these allegations came out. Very strange allegations from women who claimed 40 years ago Roy Moore asked them out on a date when they were teenagers. This is what they claimed, when he was in his 30s and they were teenagers. And 40 years ago, they suddenly remembered this, several weeks before the election, something that happened. For 40 years, this never came out. For 40 years, they never brought any of this up. All of a sudden, 3 or 4 weeks before the election, all of a sudden they remember these so-called incidents. And, you know, the audacity of these hypocrites, the same hypocrites who supported Bill Clinton, who raped Juanita Broderick. Bill Clinton is a rapist. He raped Juanita Broderick. He sexually attacked women, Kathleen Wiley and other women. He sexually attacked them, violently attacked them, and preyed on women who were young enough to be his daughter or his granddaughter. And that was acceptable when he was president. What did they say when he was president? You remember in the 1990s what they said? It doesn't affect the job he's doing as president. As long as it doesn't affect the job he's doing as president, what's the difference? And suddenly it became such a big issue with Roy Moore. And again, I am extremely skeptical, to say the least, about the allegations against Roy Moore. But in any event, he was pro-Israel, unlike Trump. He supported, by the way, Roy Moore and his wife both supported Ted Cruz for president in the Republican primary in Alabama, so that's also a big plus. So, you know, we supported him, and we thought that he should win. Now, Donald Trump is saying Roy Moore should concede immediately. He said Roy Moore should concede and should accept that he was defeated, even though it was a very close election and there was a lot of suspicious activity that took place. This is the same Donald Trump that never concedes and has never accepted defeat. And every time he was beaten, he always claimed that it was unfair or was rigged. You remember when Ted Cruz beat him in the Iowa caucuses? He said the caucuses are rigged, which was absurd. And he himself said later on, when he was winning, he said, well, I don't think it's rigged now because I'm winning. That, he literally admitted it. Every time Ted Cruz beat him in Colorado or in Iowa or anywhere else, he said it was rigged. The primary of the caucus was rigged every time he lost. When he won, it wasn't rigged. And this same guy that never accepts the results of any election was telling Roy Moore immediately, you have to accept the results, you have to concede. Such a hypocrite, so disgusting. If Donald Trump had not intervened on behalf of Luther Strange in the Republican primary and had not helped Luther Strange raised tens of millions of dollars to smear Roy Moore. And Donald Trump went to Alabama to campaign for Luther Strange. If all that hadn't happened, if there had been less of the vicious campaign, the vicious, decisive, polarizing smear campaign against Roy Moore, with this close election, Roy Moore probably would have gotten elected easily to the Senate. He probably would have beaten his Democrat opponent in Alabama by several percentage points. So Donald Trump and the GOP are responsible for Roy Moore's defeat, are responsible for the fact that a liberal Democrat now is going to be the U.S. Senator from Alabama. But we wanted to review this again to show you Donald Trump has no loyalty to anybody. He is an establishment swamp fraud and always has been. The true anti-establishment candidate was always Ted Cruz. And people like Roy Moore. And those are the people that we support. Donald Trump is the ultimate establishment guy, except that he's also unbalanced. He's mentally unbalanced. So he's an establishment guy, but he's chaotic. And the establishment gets nervous when someone's chaotic, but that doesn't mean that he won't do their bidding. He still does their bidding, but he does it chaotically because he's incompetent and because he's unbalanced. What a disaster. What a disaster for America that Trump is president. And you know, let me just see how much time we've taken up. I am very pessimistic about the 2020 presidential race. I think there is an excellent chance that a left-wing Democrat, an extreme left Democrat, is going to win that election now because of Donald Trump. He has so discredited Republicanism and conservatism. And the polls show him doing so poorly, and the Republicans doing so poorly, I think we're headed for a disaster. I think it's possible that the ultimate nightmare could come true in 2020, and Bernie Sanders, the ultimate self-hating, Judenrat, capo, socialist, anti-Israel Jew, intermarried, assimilated, Jewish anti-Semite, the worst enemy of the Jewish people, Bernie Sanders could become president. I think it's possible. And Donald Trump and you Trumpsters will have paved the road for that. That's the end of the United States if that happens. That's it. Then it's over. Then it's over. And you will have paved the way. And if it's not him, if it's not Bernie Sanders, it's Kamala Harris. Who's Kamala Harris? She was the district attorney of San Francisco and insisted that she, as district attorney, is going to abide by a sanctuary policy of protecting illegal aliens that murder innocent people in San Francisco. As district attorney, she insisted that that was going to be her policy. By the way, she's married to a self-hating Jew. And Kamala Harris, she's one of the front runners now for the Republican nomination in 2020. Another one is Kristen Gillibrand, senator from New York, who supports the BDS movement, who supports boycotting and divesting from Israel. People were amazed. A senator from New York, this never happened before, but the Jews in New York are so left-wing and so assimilated and so self-hating, you can get away with anything now. And so she's come out and withdrawn her support for anti-BDS legislation. And that shocked a lot of people in Jewish organizations, criticized her and everything else. She doesn't care. She knows she's going to be reelected by a landslide, and she knows that the self-hating Jews will still vote for her and still support her no matter what she does. In fact, many of them will support her even more if she works to destroy Israel. So this is what we're looking at in 2020. This is the type of nightmare scenario that we're looking at in 2020. And again, Donald Trump has paved the way for this disaster with his incompetence, his instability, his insanity, his egotism, his arrogance, his corruption. Everything about him, his scandals, everything about him has so discredited republicanism and conservatism that it's hard for me to see how we get out of this mess. I hope somehow that we can. I hope somehow we can prevent the ultimate disaster in the 2020 presidential race. We'll see. God help us. This week's parasha in our review of Torah Judaism now is Parashat Vayigash. Parashat Vayigash. When I say parasha means the Torah portion that we read every week in the synagogue. We read a portion of the first five books of the Bible, of the Torah, every week. And in this week's parasha, Joseph, he's now the viceroy. He's Moshel Mitzrayim, the viceroy of Egypt, ruling over Egypt, in effect. Paro, Pharaoh, put him over all of Egypt. And he now, Yosef, wants to keep his brother Binyamin there. And so he tells the 11 other brothers, Binyamin is going to stay with me. I would never punish all of you for stealing. He planted an item that was supposedly stolen from the palace on Binyamin, and then said, well, Binyamin has to stay with me. And there are many reasons for that. I don't want to go into the details because I want to discuss a different aspect of this. But Yosef, basically, in this week's parasha, says to the brothers, that's it, Binyamin is going to stay with me. And Yehuda, who is the leader of the other brothers, is the leader of the brothers. He becomes the leader, and he is the leader. He is the one that King David and that the kings of Israel come from, Yehuda. And we're called Yehudim, we're called Jews because of Yehuda, because of Judah. Because we come from that tribe. That's the tribe that survived. The other tribes are missing. But in any event, Yehuda confronts Yosef and basically puts his life on the line. And he confronts the ruler of Egypt, the world superpower, and confronts him and says and insists that they're not leaving without Binyamin, and explains to him why. And he's diplomatic about it, but he's very firm, and he risks his life in what he does. And when Yehuda meets with Yosef and confronts him, Yosef sees that Yehuda has changed and that Yehuda regrets having sold Yosef, that he sold Yosef into slavery. He sold Yosef to the Egyptians. Joseph was sold by his brothers into slavery. And he sees that Yehuda regrets having done that. By the way, if for those of you who wonder, well, what's the punishment? Well, didn't Yehuda get punished for that? He sold his brother into slavery. I mean, shouldn't he be punished for that? He was punished for that very severely. His wife died and his two sons died. So he really got punished for that. He had a terrible, terrible, nightmarish life for 22 years because of what he did to his brother, because he sold his brother into slavery. And after the death of his wife and his two sons, he does tshuva. He certainly regretted what he did, and Yosef right away sees that he's a changed person. But Yosef and Yehuda and the whole story of the tribes has a much bigger and wider meaning, a greater historic meaning, if you put it into a historic context. Yosef represents the cosmopolitan view of Jews, that they have to live among the nations of the world and be influential and run Facebook and Google and technology companies and be the son-in-law of the President of the United States and have all of these other influential positions and influence the nations of the world. That's the view of Yosef. That's why Yosef went to Egypt. He became the ruler of Egypt. He saw Egypt as the future. He thought Egypt, this is the future. We can influence Egypt and we can make Egypt. We'll be a light unto the nations in Egypt. Egypt is the world superpower. We'll influence the whole world. We'll bring the whole world to understand Hashem and to believe in one God and to believe in moral values and in righteousness and decency and justice. We'll make the whole world believe in all of this. And he felt through his powerful position as the viceroy of Egypt that he would have the ability to do this. So that was his view, the cosmopolitan internationalist view of Judaism. Yehuda, Judah, represents the other view of Judaism, that the Jews will indeed influence the nations of the world and will indeed be a light unto the nations and a holy nation, nation of priests, but they will do it by setting an example in their own land, separate and distinct from the other nations of the world. Am levadad yishkon uvagoyim lo yitchashav. This is a nation that shall dwell alone and not be reckoned among the nations, it says in the Torah. In other words, Yehuda's notion is, let's set up an ideal situation in the land of Israel, and from there the whole world will see. We'll set an example for the rest of the world. If the world follows, they follow. Those that follow will be saved. Those that don't follow will face punishment for choosing evil. But at least there we can set up the proper choice, the proper moral choice, and the proper moral standard for people so that they'll at least know that there's a standard being set here. So that's the two conflicting views. Yehuda is the Zionist. He's the one that believes all Jews must be in Eretz Yisrael, in the land of Israel. He's the one who rejects Yosef's dreams because Yosef was dreaming about his brothers bowing before him and even his father and mother bowing before him and basically implying that this was all going to take place outside the land of Israel. His brothers rejected that. That was one of the reasons why his brothers ended up selling him into slavery, because they thought he was a traitor. They thought he was betraying the Zionist ideal. They thought he was betraying what the Jews are supposed to be doing, the mission of the Jews in the world, and they thought that he was advocating an assimilationist approach that would endanger the Jewish people and endanger the whole goal of the Jewish people. In any event, it was still wrong for them, though, to sell him into slavery. They were, even though Yehuda was right and Yosef was wrong. Yosef was wrong when he said that we can make this happen in Egypt, or we can make this happen in the United States or in Europe or elsewhere, and we shouldn't just be limited to one little country, and we can become very powerful and influential and change the world like this. He was wrong. He's been proven wrong throughout history. His way is wrong. The way of going back to Israel, that is the correct way. That's the way that's what God demands of us, and that's God's plan, and that's the correct way. And Yosef, eventually we see how Yosef was proven wrong in Egypt. What happened? As soon as Yosef died, and that generation died, the Egyptians quickly became jealous of the Jews and immediately turned them into slaves and started persecuting them and murdering them and murdering their firstborn and slaughtering them and doing terrible things to them. So you see right away that it doesn't work. It doesn't work, the attempt to influence the nations and lift the nations up. the nations respond with hatred and jealousy. And it will not work. That approach doesn't work. It was proven in Egypt that it doesn't work. It was proven in the Egypt, in the other Egypt in modern times, in Germany, that it didn't work. Germany and Austria, they were supposed to be the nations where the Jews said, Berlin is our Jerusalem, the Jews in Germany. And there were rabbis in Germany, Orthodox rabbis in Germany, who said, this is where we should now take a stand. This is where we can now bring redemption from Germany, because Germany's so enlightened and so cultured and so educated. Yeah. The German people were very grateful, as we saw. They responded very well to that. And every time in history that the Jews have tried this, it ends in disaster. In the United States, we see the same thing. The result of Jews staying in the United States is massive assimilation, self-hatred that is unbelievable, evil immoral behavior. Look at the head of Facebook, intermarried, assimilated, self-hating, anti-Israel scum. The same thing with Google, the founders and people that run Google, all self-hating, vile scum that work against their own people. And you can go on and on with all of the other influential Jews and the terrible things that they wind up bringing to the world. So the approach of Yosef doesn't work. We've seen that historically. Whereas when Israel wins miraculous victories and indeed does separate herself from the other nations, look at what happens. In the 1948 War of Independence, 600,000 Jews are in the land of Israel, surrounded by 150 million Arabs who are promising in the UN. In the UN, their ambassadors were promising to push the Jews into the sea and finish Hitler's job. It looked hopeless. And the United States, even after voting for the resolution partitioning the land of Israel, the United States then changes its mind and says, we now want an American-British joint control of the land. We want you not to declare a Jewish state. There should not be a Jewish state declared. The United States starts pressuring the Jewish leaders not to declare a Jewish state. A Jewish state was declared anyway. The Jews defied the United States, defied the world, and declared a Jew, defied the British Empire and declared a Jewish state, and were fought against the whole Arab world. What did that defiance lead to? It led to the resurrection of Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel for the first time in 2,000 years. For the first time in history, a nation expelled from her homeland returns to the land and redeems the land after 20 centuries of exile. And biblical prophecies all come true. And the land is turned from a desert into a garden, and one of the most desolate, horrible places in the world to the most beautiful, flourishing place in the world. I mean, the miracles that have happened are unbelievable. 10 of ye shall chase 1,000 of them, 100 of ye shall put 10,000 of them to flight. The Jews, outnumbered 100-1, win the war in 1948 against all odds, shocking the world, shocking themselves even. And so the way of Yehuda is the way that will bring final redemption in the end. And the same thing in the 1967 war. 1967, the United States pressured Israel, don't strike first, don't do this, don't defend yourself. Lyndon Johnson even cut off all arms shipments to Israel for 130 days as a punishment. I mean, massive pressure on Israel. The Soviets threatened to intervene against Israel. Israel ignored all of that. They went to war. And Israel quadrupled in only 6 days. I mean, the most astounding miracle since biblical times in thousands of years. Lo, it is a nation that shall dwell alone and not be reckoned among the nations. And so, we're going to have two Meshichim, it says, in the Oral Torah. Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David. Mashiach ben Yosef is the Messiah that will pave the way for the final Messiah. It's not absolutely necessary that there be two Meshichim. Harambam says that it's possible there'll only be Mashiach ben David, but it could be that we have two. Mashiach ben Yosef will pave the way. He will He will help us defeat our enemies and prepare for Mashiach ben David. But the final real redemption, the eternal redemption, comes with Mashiach ben David. David, King David, comes from Yehudah, from Judah, from the tribe of Judah. And so comes from the school, the Jewish school of thought, that we have to, by example, become a light unto the nations, a holy nation, a nation of priests. That's the way that we can change the world. Let's see now how we're doing. Okay. And so, this week, we did Hebrew videos about Yinon Reuveni, a Jewish kid who was sentenced to 4 years in prison for defending the Jewish people. We did Hebrew videos about Meir Ettinger, the grandson of Rabbi Meir Kahana, who's also being persecuted for his beliefs in Israel. We've done videos showing that under Likud governments, under the phony right, more than 10 times as many Jews have been expelled as under left-wing governments, because the phony right is able to do it, able to carry it out better than the phony left. Every day another video in Hebrew reaching the people of Israel. Don't you want them to hear this truth? Don't you want Jewish heroes who are being persecuted in the land of Israel to have someone to defend them and stand up for them? Don't you want the people of Israel to have a true choice? Because without us, they don't. Nobody says what we say. Nobody brings the message to them that we bring. And of course, our videos also, we also promote Moshe Feiglin, who is running for the Knesset, running for the Israeli parliament under the Zehut party. We're supporting him as well. And so we're doing everything we can to make a difference. And that's really why we're in this world. That's the real reason we're in this world. You can be part of that. You can help us if you want to make this a better world. And if you want the people of Israel to get the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth, then you're in the right place. Help us financially as much as you can. Help us in every other way, promoting our videos, promoting our websites. Together, if we fight as a team, we can still make this a better world. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.